You are listening to Grandpa Lempsheets on RadioArian.com.
Believe it or not, another week has flown by. It's time for installment number 28, Church of the Lampshade Show. Grandpa Lampshade, as always, your host, here with you once again, nice and cozy at Radio Arian on a Tuesday. I want to, as always, start off with a special thank you to the four supporters who have financially supported what we're doing here. I say it and I say how much I appreciate it. And I just feel like a lot of times like it falls up short. It falls up empty. I really do appreciate it. I mean, the fact of the matter is if every single person that listens to the show threw a few bucks this way, I'd be doing really well financially. And instead, just a handful of you. And a lot of times it's the same handful, step forward every week and carry the load encourage us what we do here, encourage me in what I do here. And I really do appreciate it. And I can't say how much it means to me just to know. I know Lampshade listeners are regular working people like me, a few bucks out of your pocket to come my way is a few bucks that you could have used for something else. And I'm aware of this. I appreciate it. The fact of the matter is the vast majority, like 99% of the people listening to the show never do that. And the handful of you that do, you're the ones that step forward. And it means a lot to me. It really does. I do appreciate it. If you want in on that, that information's down at the bottom of the page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. You got some other weirdo cryptocurrency, shoot me an email. I'll try to get you an address for that. I'll take your ox. I don't care. I'm not that prideful. listener questions, comments, or just want to say hello, whatever. Email address down there, grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. Feel free to shoot them to you. Speaking of listener questions, comments, we're just going to basically have a listener question comment centered show this week because we've got a lot of good stuff received this week from listeners, and that's kind of what we're going to be centered on. I didn't have to think up of anything on my own, as always the case, the listeners come up with some of the most almost said convoluted some of the most really tough questions, the tough topics to tackle, but that's okay. You don't make it easy on the Lampshade, but that's all right. We'll step up, we'll do this. And let's just, on that note, let's get to it. Let's jump in here. This comes via email. Grandpa Lampshade, feel free to use this on the show. Just keep me anonymous. We always try to keep our listeners, when it comes to this, we protect your anonymity. And this is a fairly long listener question comment, and I generally edit these down quite a bit. But I wanted to go ahead and pretty much read most of this without editing much out, because there's a lot of stuff here to cover and we'll wrap it up. It's all pretty much wrapped up in the last paragraph, but we'll get to it. Grandpa Lampshade, I've been listening to you from since the beginning on Radio Air, and that's a long time. It's hard to believe we've been at this for so long. This may sound cheesy, threadbare and gay, but you put a smile on my face with your weekly show, albeit if it's just for an hour or so, and I'm glad. It's good. It's good to be, it's good that we can all come together like this and try to enjoy a fellowship, if it were, enjoy life, if it were. It's too bad I don't possess the same optimism as you, or so I perceive, in these trying times. About a decade ago, I woke up to the JQ, until 4 years ago, to no avail. I tried waking up others to the JQ. How did that work out for you? I can imagine. Sadly, the only ones I was on a similar wavelength with on this were foreigners. Thus, I came to the conclusion, America isn't worth saving because Americans are too philosemitic and far gone. In other words, Americans are just too stupid. Even before waking up, I believed in the truism, you can't fix stupid. Without a doubt, that transcends racial identity. As far as the alt-right goes, I have only patronized Dr. Duke by purchasing some books from his website. Aside from him, I don't waste my time donating to the movement. Not so much because I'm a skint, rather, it's because much of the alt-right refuses to acknowledge the errors of Whitey's ways. Case in point, putting those dumbasses who served in Iraq and other places in the desert, I assume, on a pedestal and asking others to feel sympathy for them when they're discarded by the government. I'm a strong advocate for eugenics. Unabashedly, I can say that I'm not an alpha male and nothing to prove to anyone. Am I a cuck? I don't think I am, but you might beg to differ. Years ago, I had an argument with a woman. She told me I don't have anything to offer women. Initially, I brushed it off, but after thinking it over, I came to the conclusion as I approached 40 and struggled to forge a career, I realized I have nothing to offer women. I'm neither an alcoholic or a drug addict. I'm not a fan of pornography. I'm a university grad with nothing to show for it. I severed ties with my family. I have no children. Don't plan on having any. I dare say the only redeeming qualities I have is a work ethic, if a job is bearable, and no criminal history background. In all fairness, any retard with a scintilla of discipline can be a hard worker and not a criminal. I'm nothing extraordinary. Considering the aforementioned in regard to saving the West, I can aver that I don't have a dog in this fight. Harking back to eugenics, don't you think I or anyone of similar circumstances am doing society a favor? Wow. Well, you know, I'm not that optimistic. Getting back to one of the first things you touched on, I'm not. I don't think I am. I guess it comes off that way. Nobody would listen to the show if I just showed up here every day and said, there's no point. Well, there's no point. We're all going to die. Nobody would tune in. I know there would be no point in it. I have to drag myself in here to do this show sometimes, honestly. And there's days that I look around and it is tempting to feel like, what's the use? What's the point? But the fact of the matter is, we have no choice but to fight. We're not guaranteed to win. I mean, if somebody comes along and attacks you, you can either cow down and let them beat you, or you can fight back, even though you may know that you probably don't have a great chance of winning. You know, you can fight. There's no guarantee you can win. And that's kind of what I look at this struggle as. You can fight back and do your best, or you just lay down and take the beating. And I would prefer to do what I can. What little I can. But it's not optimism. I mean, I'm of the mind that societal collapse is inevitable. I mean, that is my position. Societal collapse is an inevitable thing. You couldn't stop it. Now, there are some people in the nationalist movement that have this vision that, like, I don't know, white people are somehow going to seize control of the U.S. government as it stands and use that power to send the Jews to Israel, blacks to Africa, all the bean people back south of the border, and we'll have the United States of Whitetopia. I don't think that's a realistic position. And some people criticize that and say, oh, well, you're just surrendering. You can't surrender. We can't give any ground. No, I just deal in reality. And you look around at the current state of the United States of America, and I don't think that's a realistic thing to shoot for. I mean, your opinion may vary, and you're obviously, whoever's listening, you're entitled to your belief, but that's not mine. I don't think that's realistic. I think we're looking at a future of breaking apart, collapse, borders being redrawn, just the way things have always worked out through history. And when those borders are redrawn, you're going to have these different territories, these different areas, and they'll ultimately, people will wind up naturally congregating amongst their own kind for the most part. I mean, that's nature. That's the natural order of things. And by the way, this is a great listener question comment. I want to thank the listener for sending this in. And it's difficult because it hits a lot of stuff. And I'll be honest, I was 40 minutes into the show. 40 minutes into the show, hadn't gotten into the sermon yet, looking at this, finishing up discussing this, and I completely just scrapped it because I wasn't happy with the way it was going. I didn't feel like I was hitting this the way I wanted to, and addressing it in the way I wanted to. So, you know, it's not very often that I do that. I mean, it's not very often I spend that much time on something and then sit there and reflect on it and say, no, this isn't what I want this show to look like, and scrap it and start all over again. But, I care a lot about the quality of the show, and I take these things that are brought to me, these topics, I take them seriously. I do. I received this from the listener several days ago. And as I've been doing other things, struggling, trying to scratch out a living for the week and the things that I do during the week, You know, this has been rattling around in the back of my mind. Those have been rattling around back here. And it's honestly, it's bothered me. It's bothered me in the fact that how many other people are in the same position as the person who sent this to me. And honestly, I think it's a very bad place. It's a very bad place. And we, as a society, in this corrupt, fallen society that we live in, everything, you think about what the messages that we're exposed to, and even those of us on the dissident right that are aware of these things, you know, you're aware of them, and it gives you a certain amount of defense, but it doesn't change the fact that we're inundated with these messages constantly. Our worth in this society is how much shit can you buy? How much money do you got in the bank? Who are you? Do people know who you are? Are you a celebrity of some sort? Do you have some sort of status? And that's our self-worth in this empty, shitty society, this collapsing, decaying, rotten corpse of a society that we live in. Really not any wonder how many people are right where this listener's at. What's the point? What do we have to offer? We're mostly going to focus on the last paragraph of this here. I'm just going to touch on the other stuff. As far as waking the futility of waking people up to the JQ. I've been at this for a minute. You know, I get it. I do. I say, it is largely in a lot of ways, it is futile. I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, how many people, you know, are actually, but it's not completely futile. I think a lot of it is a matter of tactic. And I've been here. This has been a trial and error thing for me and continues to be so, honestly. I see when it comes to people, because there's good things. I see people now who weren't talking about, say, the Jews a couple years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and now they are talking. You know, I see people that are moving along. That having been said, one of the hard and most difficult things to do, and again, we're just going to kind of touch lightly on this because I really think the meat of the question comment is here in this last paragraph, but I wanted to touch on this a little bit because one of the most difficult things to do is to get somebody to change their worldview. It is. And one of the really insidious things about the great lie that people have bought into, like the Jews are these chosen people lie, where the church has been subverted to where the modern cuck church basically runs around and says you're obligated to this made up nation of Israel in the Middle East and you owe them your support, your money and your blood of your sons to go fight for them. One of the most difficult things to do is to change people's worldview. I mean, it's one of the most absolutely difficult things to do. And I think a lot of people go into this and they don't really grasp that. It is. It's a very difficult thing to grasp, but I understand that this is a monumental accomplishment. And I'm going to tell you, honestly, just running around and talking about the Jews, it's people tune you out after a while. They do. I mean, after a while, they don't listen to you. I think a more, and before I get off into that, you're right. You're correct as far as letting our own people off the hook. One of the things I think is great about this network, about Radio Aryan and what Sven Longshanks is doing with this network, is the focus on we have to better our own people. I do agree with you that there's a tendency a lot of times, I think, to just simply blame everything on the Jews. And I'm not letting the Jews off the hook here for what they're doing and the role they're playing. I'm not at all. But instead, one of the things the network focuses on, and the mission of the network as a whole, is that we've got to bring our own people up. I mean, the bottom line is the Jews have gotten away with, they're 2% of the population. I mean, they've gotten away with what they've gotten away with. They exert the amount of power that they exert because our people for generations have allowed that to happen. They made choices. Those who came generations ago over time have made choices that have allowed that to happen. They didn't force it on us. Our people over the years, great, great generations ago, made choices that allowed that to happen. I don't know. I think there's a tendency in the dissident right. I don't like the term alt-right anymore. I really don't. I really was never a huge fan of it anyway. I like dissident right, so that's what I use. But we're talking about the same thing. There tends to be, I think, these two split views on this in the dissident right. There's one that goes to the extreme of self-hatred. Like, it's all our own people. Our people suck. They deserve to be wiped out. At which point it's like, well, we can stop here. You know, we'll just stop here. And then there's this other view that just wants to lay so much, like, everything is the Jews. Everything is the Jews. It's the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. And it's like, well, yeah, but I mean, the Jews wouldn't have all that if our people over the years hadn't let them. I mean, they're 2% of the population. Come on. You know, I mean, really, let's be real here. I mean, at some point in time, it's so obvious, and yet people generations ago and continue to just, okay, go along with it. So, I mean, and is the case so often, I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. I mean, we can't just have a self-hatred for our own people. But at the same time, our people have allowed what has happened to them. They have. And it's not to let the Jews off the hook for the role they have played. But you can't sit here and just lay it all on the Jews. You know, you watch somebody will accuse me of cucking to the Jews now. But the reality is, and I really think that one of the things that this network does, and that I really think is a great thing, is the view that we have to focus on getting our people to overcome that. Now, as to tactic with this, again, trial and error on my part. You know, I have come to discover one of the best ways to get people, if you're going to try to get people to change an established view they have, it's virtually impossible to do that unless you can get them to believe they have come to that change of view on their own. You can't sit there and I don't care how many facts you present. I don't care how many charts you put up. I don't care how many statistics you put up. I don't care how many times you scream about it. In their face, they're not going to accept it because you're asking them to change their view, which is basically admitting they're wrong. And people, you know, and they're wrong about something they've believed for years, and people just aren't open to that. That's not saying that it's pointless to bring facts and present them, but when that's all you do, people don't listen. They just simply tune you out. You've got to find a way to lead people to these truths, and it's a hard thing to do. You have to lead people these truths where they suddenly come on their own to accept them. You don't get credit. It's a thankless thing because you don't get any credit for it. And they're like, I just realized the Jews have been doing all this, you know, and you don't get any credit. But that's the only way. That's the only way you get people to change their view, is to come to the conclusion that they figured it out themselves. It's a thankless job. You don't get any credit for it. But in the end, it's futile to just, if you're one of these people and all you do on, say, online or whatever is the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, those people just tune you out. They're not listening to you. I mean, the other people that are already there, maybe they're going, yeah, you're right. You know, but as far as anybody else, quote unquote, waking up to the JQ, they don't. They're not going to listen. A better tactic. So let's present something. Okay, lampshade. Then what do you say? A better tactic is to find a common ground. Find a common ground somewhere where you do agree with people. Say, you know, find a common ground where they do agree with you eye to eye on an issue, something with race, for instance. Maybe they agree with you on black crime, for instance. Okay, well, you build on that. And then as you go along with that discussion, you know, maybe once in a while you drop something, you know, about, you know, oh, the Jew, you know, man, wow, it's a Jew again. You know, I mean, just, but don't make it, that's all you talk about. But, you know, you have to leave those things for people. And again, this is just things I've tried and, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. But I've come to the conclusion that yes, simply trying to quote unquote, wake up the masses to the JQ is by and large futile. I mean, it's just, that's where we are. Our society is sick. Now, I want to get to the point of the last paragraph, because really, I think this gets to where the listener is at here. And honestly, to where a lot of people are at, because one of the things I really want out of listener questions, comments, is things that I think really apply to a lot of people. I mean, if your personal position is, you know, should I do this on this particular, you know, I mean, it's something just particular to you. I mean, I don't mind answering you an email or something, you know, what I think about it. That's not a problem. But when we come to using things on the show, I like stuff that, you know, a lot of people, I think, could apply to a lot of people. And again, you shouldn't be shy about it, because, you know, a lot of things you think are just you, actually do apply to a lot of people. You're not the only one. So now we're brought back to this final paragraph, which I think is the summary of where the listener's at, and sadly where a lot of people are at. And it's a bad place. And the listener, you may be, Lampshade, you got me all wrong. No, I don't think I do. And I think maybe you don't realize what a bad place you're in. So I'm going to reread this last paragraph, and we're going to get to the heart of this topic. A strong advocate for eugenics. Remember that. A strong advocate for eugenics. Unabashedly, I can say I'm not an alpha male. I have nothing to prove to anyone. Am I a cuck? I don't think I am. But you might beg to differ. Years ago, I had an argument with a woman who told me I don't have anything to offer women initially. I brushed it off. But after thinking about it, I've come to realize I have nothing to offer women. I am not an alcoholic or drug addict. I'm not a fan of pornography. I'm a university grad, and I got nothing to show for it. I severed ties with my family. I have no children. I don't plan on having any. I dare say the only redeeming qualities I have is a work ethic if a job is bearable, and no criminal history record. In all fairness, any retard with a scintilla of discipline can be a hard worker and not a criminal. I am nothing extraordinary. Considering the aforementioned in regard to saving the West, I can aver I haven't a dog in the fight. Harking back to eugenics, don't you think I or anyone of similar circumstances am doing society a favor? I want you to think for a minute about the great leaders of society. Say you're a fan of Hitler. Say Hitler's a great leader. He led a struggle for the betterment of his people. Who were his people? I mean, National Socialist Germany, they believed in eugenics in the sense of, you know, I mean, we have a backward eugenics program. In this country right now, the government financially incentivizes the dumbest of society, the least contributors of society, to have the most kids, while the better is those who do have a strong worker, those who, you know, the higher you up in society are incentivized to have as few children as possible. We have a backwards eugenics program right now. But I want you to think about someone like, say a Hitler. Or whatever favorite leader you have in the world that led a struggle for their people. Who were they leading the struggle for? I mean, the vast majority of the people are always going to wind up being what? Workers. Workers that just do nothing but go to work, contribute, have children, and bring up the next generation. 99.9999% of the people are not going to leave a mark on history. That's a fact. Now, you may say, well, then they have no point in being on this earth. Oh, really? Let me ask something. Let's say you had somebody and let's say you had somebody that had the most brilliant engineering mind, an architect. Let's say an architect, the most brilliant architectural mind that has ever existed in the history of the world. And this guy, he can design the most amazing structures, be it a bridge, be it a building, just breathtaking. Nothing. He could design something that is absolutely like nothing that's ever existed before. Something that you can look at and say, in 100 years, people will stand in awe of this great structure. Here's the only problem. It only exists on paper. Who's going to weld the beams together? Who's going to pour the cement? Who's going to lay the bricks? Who's going to install the glass? Who's going to do all of the things that make this guy's great vision a reality? Workers. People that are willing to show up. People that are willing to show up and to put their effort and contribute. That artwork, that great structure wouldn't exist unless the guy who has a talent for laying bricks. There's a thankless, unamazing job. What's your great talent for contributing to society? Laying bricks. Woo-hoo, whoop-de-doo. But if that guy can't show up and apply his talent, the structure will never be a reality. If the guy who's capable of showing up and welding the beams together doesn't exist, because who needs those people? We only need the greatest minds in our society. You want to call it? Wow, we can draw things up on paper. Oh, wait, no, because we don't have any paper, because we don't have anybody that works in a paper factory making paper, so we can't even design that. The people the great leader struggled for were these people. It just went through life, went through their day-to-day life, building a future for their kids. Now, what makes this such a dark place is you're doing a eugenics program against yourself. You've isolated. I worry when I read somebody that there's a lot of clues here that they're isolated, because one of the things that the enemy does, whether it's in the physical realm or the spiritual realm, whether you're dealing with leftist human enemies or whether you're a Christian believer and you're dealing with spiritual enemies, one of the things you just count on them doing, one of the tactics is isolation. If the enemy can isolate you, you are essentially done. And there's a lot of things I read here that scream isolation. I don't have anything to offer women. Severed ties with my family. I don't know what that's about. I don't know what the reason is. It doesn't really matter, because it all still points to isolationism. My life is pointless. I don't have anything great thing to offer. Nothing to offer women. Severed ties with my family. No kids. Don't plan on having any. I'm probably doing society a favor. Everything in this screams isolation. And it's a very bad place to be. You ask, am I a cuck? Well, no. I mean, you're not a cuck unless you're raising a kid thinking it's yours and it's actually not. And no, you're not a cuck. I mean, that would literally be a cuck thing. So I don't think you're a cuck. But I would ask this. You have nothing to offer women. Well, I'll ask you this. What do these women have to offer you? What do you owe any of these women? You don't have anything to offer. Well, I got nothing to offer. What do they have to offer you? What great thing do these women that you have nothing to offer to? What exactly are they bringing to the table? Well, I mean, really, you go to work every day. You know, you're working a job steady. Maybe it's not your dream career. Guess what? Most people aren't. What are they bringing to the table? Yeah, what do you owe them exactly? You have nothing to offer women. What do you think you owe them exactly? What do these women, what do you owe them that you need to bring something to offer them? Maybe they need to be thinking about what they have to offer you, because let me tell you what, somebody who's actually got a work ethic, no criminal history, doesn't use drugs, that's a lot more rare than you think it is. As somebody who used to, in a previous life, hire people, let me tell you, the number one obstacle, and if you're listening to this show and you have that position, you're sitting there nodding your head, the number one obstacle, number one, is will they show up? I kid you not. The number one obstacle, will they show up every day? Will they be the type of person that every time I turn around, they're hiding and trying to get out of doing anything? These are just basic fundamental things. You can laugh, but let me tell you what, those are your top hurdles. Well, I don't care if somebody doesn't know how to do the job. You can teach that, but they got to show up every day. They got to be willing to try. Guess what? We're in a society where that's a great accomplishment now. What do you think most people do in life? Most people, that's it. That is all they do. That's all there is. There is no great accomplishments for anybody out there. There's very few people that are going to do something so great that are going to be written down in the history books. If that's all that existed of the world, humanity itself would cease to exist. There just wouldn't be enough of them. If the only people that reproduced were those who were going to have historically, you know, jotted down in the history book accomplishments, there wouldn't be any future, because there's just not enough of them. It would fall into inbreeding, and then you're back to square one. So getting to the final question, are you or anyone of similar circumstances actually doing society a favor? No, I don't think you're doing anything for society. You're sitting around looking at yourself and going, well, I'm nothing. All I do, all I'm capable of is going to work, not going to jail, and not doing drugs. Well, you're way ahead of the rest of society. I'm trying to figure out the right way I want to phrase this, but what you've discovered is the dead end. The dead end of this nihilistic society, nihilism. The dead end of self-focus, of what we're told matters in this life. How much stuff you got? Are you a celebrity? Are you somebody important? Are you this? Are you that? How much money do you got in the bank? The dead end of all of that, because it is, it's a lie in our society, and you've discovered that dead end. And when you get that dead end, what's the point? Not a celebrity. Not ever going to be a celebrity. I'm just a working guy. Whoop-de-doo, I show up to work every day. That's all that most people are doing. But just like the bricklayer building the architect's building, the great structure that we discussed earlier, everybody doing their little part is what makes that great vision a reality. I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass. I'm not a motivational speaker. I'm going to sit here and pat you on the head and say, yes, you can. Yes, you can. But I'm telling you, this is life. The vast majority of us are not going to be recorded in the history books. We're not going to do these breathtaking accomplishments. Guess what? That's life. That's reality. What you need to do, if you're listening to this and you're in this type of position, you in this mindset, you're getting isolated and you're getting in a really, really bad place. And again, you may be sitting there laughing going, no, I'm not. Yes, you are. When you're isolated like this, when you're isolating and closing in on yourself, and it's easy to get sucked into that when all your focus starts becoming on yourself. And I'm speaking from experience here, by the way. When all you focus on is yourself, what you should be doing, what can I do, what me, it's real easy to isolate yourself. You've got to find a way to start looking outside, to start changing your way of thinking. Are you going to do something breathtaking that changes the world? Probably not. I'm not. I have no illusions that I am. Can you do something? Sure. What is it? I don't know. Find it. I don't care how little it is. Find a way. A good starting spot is find a way to do something for somebody else. If it's something you can do for somebody else that you're probably not going to get anything back in return for, all the better. Because why? How will you profit from that? Well, because it gets your focus off of yourself and you can start looking outward, because you can't start moving forward until you start looking outward. It's a step. And then you find something else you can do. Look, everybody, just the vast majority of people, all they do is go through life. They try to provide a future if they have kids. And again, that's also brings you to another level of looking towards the future, because after you're gone, a part of you will still be there. I can't sit here and tell you, go out and find a woman and have kids. That's your own choice to have. But that's another perspective that brings you. But to have this idea that because you're not going to do some great, huge accomplishment, then what's the point? I mean, that's a dead end. I mean, if everybody had that attitude, there would be no future. In fact, we wouldn't even have a present. If people in the past had that attitude, none of us would be here. And society, our race, our people, humanity itself wouldn't even exist. Appreciate the listener question, comment. I really do. I hope that it gives you something. I'm not sitting here saying, well, there's your answers. It's just all I attempt to do here is to give y'all a starting point to think of. You got to work this stuff out. I can't do it for y'all. It's a starting point for you to start thinking about it and start picking it apart and start considering these things and start moving forward. That's all I can do in 30 minutes to an hour here, is try to give y'all a starting point, a different way, you know, somewhere, a kickstart, a shot of ether to get your engine going, to get you at least pointed in a direction. But y'all have got to work these things out. And if we can do that, then we've accomplished something. Yeah. And again, if you're in this type of position, I hope that what we've discussed here can serve as a place to get you kickstarted, get you, oh, well, maybe I need to change. If you want a different result, you've got to start doing something different. And it sounds like such a simplistic way to look at things, but I cannot tell you how many times I've sat here in my lifetime and I've wound up so frustrated with where I'm at because I'm not where I want to be in there. I'm not going in the direction I want to be. I'm not in a place I'm happy with. I'm not even heading where I'm like, oh, well, I could get there. And then I realize that, you know, I'm never going to get there. I'm never going to get closer to that because I keep doing the same things over and over again. If I keep doing the same things, I'm going to keep getting the same results. If you want to be in a different place, you've got to start doing something different. And usually that involves something, you know, something different is something risky. You know, we get so cozy and comfortable in the same position. We get cozy and comfortable where we're at. It's difficult. It is. It's difficult to go to a different place and actually embark on something new. But the reality is, if you want to get to a different place, you've got to start doing some different things. Those things might wind up being a mistake, but at least it'll be different than where you're at if you're not happy with where you're at. So again, I hope this can serve as a starting point for a lot of you that might be in a similar type of view here, stuck in a rut, to start moving forward with your life. Let's get into this week's sermon. And this is going to be listener question, comment inspired as well. And we're going to cover a lot of things with this. Honestly, I'm looking at the clock. I don't know that we can do this without running over on the show this week, but that's okay. Extra lampshade is good lampshade. So let's go on in here. Fill those pews. That's right. It's time for this week's sermon here in the Church of the Lampshade. I already throughout the show all morning here, as I've sipped my coffee, even before recording, I have the official lampshade attire on. And let's get into this week's sermon. Fill those pews. We'll get ready here. We'll do our sermon for this week. Our definitely Christian centered message here at the Church of the Lampshade. And as you get settled in here, this week's sermon topic, this also comes from a listener question. I'm not going to attribute it to the listener in particular for the simple fact I kind of got this at the last minute before recording this week's show. So I haven't had a chance to reach out to the listener and say, hey, you know, I'm use this as a directly deal. And as always, I really am sensitive about protecting y'all's privacy. So, but you're the listener, you know who you are. And I thought this was a great topic. Grandpa Lampshade, my daughter and her husband have split up and the future for their marriage is in doubt. I was thinking, would marriage and what it means, what it entails, be a good topic for the show? It's an excellent topic. And once again, you know, listener questions come, it's kind of a double-edged sword for me because on the one hand, it's easy because I don't have to think of things to discuss. But on the other hand, listeners always seem to bring some of the really more complicated topics, you know, really tough stuff to get into and discuss. And this is no exception either. And it's, yes, it's very much. And again, I thank the listener for this. And I'm not attributing it directly with a username or whatever, because again, I got this at the last minute and I didn't have time to reach out and email and say, hey, can I attribute this to you? And again, it's there's some personal stuff here, so I don't want to compromise anybody's personal information or, you know, I'm just highly sensitive and respectful of that, but I do appreciate it. So yeah, we're going to discuss this just before we get off into it. As we get to it, your scripture references will be Matthew 19:1-8. And I think we'll do John 15:12-13. And this is going to touch on, we're going to try to dig as deep as we can here because it's a multifaceted topic. It sounds like something that should be simple. You know, you should love your wife. Wives, be submissive. I could sit here and give you the standard answer, you know, that everybody expects to hear. Well, the Bible says, husbands, love your wives. Wives, submit to your husbands. If y'all do this, everything will work out. But that's not reality. That's not the reality of the world we live in. And it's an overly simplistic thing because we live in such a fallen and corrupted society. And this has happened again over the years. We look at the modern cuck church and we attack it because it is heresy. It deserves to be attacked. But at the same time, just as we discussed in the previous topic before leading up to the sermon, we have to realize this stuff has happened over years. The modern cuck church just didn't become that overnight. This is, by and large, the result of generations of poor decisions on our people. And leaders, people who were supposed to be leaders in the church in particular, we're going to have to... It's going to seem like I'm wandering all over the place with this. I don't know any other way to do it because, again, this is tied in to so many things. To give a real answer to, we're going to have to talk about a lot of different things. So bear with me on that because, again, my goal here is to try to be as thorough as we can. Again, I could sit here and just quote scripture about, well, a man should love his wife, a wife should be submissive to her husband, and there, that's what you're supposed to do. And if you don't, then... too bad, you know, and we can move right on, but that's not a real answer because it doesn't address, I'm not saying it's irrelevant, but I'm saying it doesn't address where we are today as a society. One of the worst mistakes the church made over the years was handing marriage over to the state. Really, the marriage used to be something that was between a man, a woman, and God. In other words, it was handled by the church. The state didn't have nothing to do with it. But somewhere along the lines, imagine that. The church cucked and handed that over to the state. The state license. State determines what marriage is. In other words, man determines what marriage is. Are we shocked that now the state has degraded to the point that it has and we have homosexual marriage? Well, why not? Because the state is the arbiter of all that is good, of what marriage means, not God. Because I see Christians make the mistake a lot of times that, well, marriage is between, you know, trying to convince people. But you see, as a society, we took God out of marriage a long time ago, generations ago. Once we started letting the state license marriage and determine what is and isn't marriage, that horse is out of the barn. He's done gone. God doesn't have anything to do with marriage anymore. It's a state thing. It's licensed by the state, so the state gets to determine whether the state says a man can marry his dog, a man can marry a man, a woman can marry a woman, a woman can marry a lizard, then that's what it is because the state has taken the place of God. Lo and behold, we have another form of idolatry. It is a huge mistake, and it was made generations ago. Now, somebody said, well, yeah, but that's necessary. Why is it necessary? Because when people get divorced, you've got to have somebody, you got to divide the property. You got to get into the property division. How's that worked out for you in the world of fairness? Wouldn't be fair if you didn't have the courts in the government to decide property divisions. Well, yeah, because we know divorce courts are the most fair things in the world when it comes to that, isn't it? Property division, you've relegated, you're surrendering ground because you've relegated marriage to nothing more than a legal contract, like a business contract, and nothing more. You've handed it over to the state. You've replaced God with the state. This is the modern state of where we're at. People will point to high divorce rate, large failure of marriages. Well, there's something wrong. Yeah, there is. There's something wrong. You've relegated it to nothing more than a legal contract arbitrated by the government. You know, I mean, there's nothing else to it. If you want to get to the nuts and bolts of what it is, what it exists as in this modern corrupt society, that's all it is. Or we dress it up. We put the window dressing on it. We have a preacher or maybe not, maybe just a judge. Show up. Read a few Bible verses. You know, leave out the obey part. Women don't like that. They don't like that love, cherish, and obey. They don't like that. So you have to leave that out. We nitpick. We pick and choose what parts we like, and we put it together like what we want it to be. Because ultimately, it's nothing more than a contract drawn up by the courts, drawn up by the government. So with this background, that the church made the mistake of handing marriage over to the government. And again, I mean, it's the reality of what we've got. So let's go ahead and continue on with where we're headed with it. So much of what we've got in a world, words have lost all their meaning. You see this when you deal with the leftists in the political sphere. Words mean what they want them to mean. Now, you're promoting hate. Well, no, I don't feel the emotion of hate, so I don't know how I could be promoting that. I'm just simply speaking the truth. You're promoting hate. Well, what does hate mean? They can't tell you. It means what they want it to mean. It means you need to shut up. You need to go away. And those are obvious examples, but what we have to understand is that so many meanings of the words that we throw around, that they've lost their meaning. They've been twisted and skewed to mean what people want them to mean at the time so much that they've essentially lost all their meaning. And, you know, love is no exception. In fact, love and hate are probably the two words that have been skewed around to the point that they've lost all their meaning. Before we get into that, let's go into our first scripture reading. Let's look at Matthew 19, verses 1 through 8. I thought this would be a good place to start on this topic. So here we are. Let's see. Matthew 19, we'll start at verse 1. And it came to pass that when Jesus had finished these sayings, he departed from Galilee and came unto the coast of Judea beyond Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came unto him, tempting. The Pharisees never show up with anything good, do they? They show up with one thing. Try to catch him. Try to trick him. Try to get him to say something that they can use against him. Because he's all about truth. They can't counter truth. So they try to trip him up. They play word games. They play little, sound familiar, doesn't it? The Pharisees came unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And he answered and said unto them, have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore there are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Now here come the Pharisees back with the but. They say unto him, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and put her away? He saith unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you to put away your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. This is interesting to me because Jesus is acknowledging here, you know, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. So this was something he's saying. This was not the original intent of God. But Moses, in recognizing that, you know, you're dealing with failed human beings here. We don't live in a perfect world. When you're dealing with people, that's the problem. The problem isn't marriage. The problem is you're dealing with corruptible, with faulty humans. You know, as long as you're alive and you're in this body, you've got faults and you're corruptible and you have weaknesses and such. And so Jesus is saying, well, the problem isn't marriage. This isn't what God intended. The problem isn't what God put together. The problem is the hardness of your hearts. The problem is you're dealing with human beings here. And so you add a level of corruption to the system. There's nothing wrong with the system God put forth. This is the cause. This is what God has set up. But the problem is you're dealing with humans. You're dealing with corruptible human beings with faults. And the problem here is it leads to, you wind up with this, you wind up with, where does it end? I mean, when Moses said, oh, well, yeah, you can divorce for whatever reason, he just went ahead and skipped to the chase. You know, because what we do here in our modern society is we put all these buts in, because you'll sit here and say, well, that's not what God intended. You shouldn't have any divorce. And what do they do? It's like abortion. It's like when you say, well, abortion's immoral and we should be opposed to it. What do they always come up with? They come up with, yeah, well, what about the case of a woman who's a victim of rape and incest and gets pregnant? Well, then you look like a complete idiot if you say, well, I'm against that too. Never mind the fact of how many women actually get abortions because of rape or incest. It's statistically insignificant. Like 99.9999% of the abortions are not for that, but they bring up an extreme example. And well, you cave on that. Well, now they've got you on the defense and now you're just negotiating. Where's it going to be? You see, and marriage is the same way. If you sit there and say, well, you know, shouldn't be any divorce. I say, oh, yeah. Well, what if the husband, what if he beats his wife and keeps her chained and won't even feed her, doesn't allow her to bathe? He's a horrible, awful human being that tortures her and cuts her with knives every night. Should she not be allowed to divorce her? Well, yeah, okay, I guess he should. Ah, well, now we're just going, now you're on the defensive and now we're going to negotiate here about where the line is. And you just keep giving until you wind up at the point that we're at today. And I said we were going to stop at verse 8, but I think I want to do verse 9 too and make another point here. And this Jesus continuing to speak, and I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whose marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. I think this is an important point that misses, because what would the point of that be? What is the high bar that Jesus has set here? Cuckoldry. I don't see any other way to look at it. Why would that bar be set there? Why would Christ say, by technically, if you want to get technical about it? And see, this one of the things I really think is illustrative here of what Christ is doing is he's refusing to go on the defensive. You see, the Pharisees are trying to get him to go ahead and play the game we just talked about, like with the abortion stuff. They bring, try to get him to go on the defensive. Instead, he takes a harder stance. He does. He refuses to go on the defense. Instead, he takes a hardcore stance. He says, yeah, okay, you know what? I'll tell you what. Except for case of fornication, it's all adultery. Y'all doing wrong. He doesn't budge an inch here. I like the tactic. I like what he's doing here. But what would that bar be? Fornication. It's to avoid cuckoldry. I really do. I believe this is what this would center in on. You raising a child that you think is yours is not yours. This is one of those high things. It is such a bad thing that, yeah, for that reason, You can go ahead and do that. What's the one thing? We've got bizarro world now, don't we? We've got courts now because we handed marriage over to the courts, to the government. Remember, we replaced God with that. You got courts now that are demanding men not be allowed. Like, they find out, they go through Splitsville with their old lady because they find out that they've been raising a kid for years and find out that they ain't even their kid. She lied. She cucked him. And the courts will come forward and say, well, you can't tell the kid that. In fact, you're still financially responsible. You got to take this kid on as your own. Because why? Because you were fooled? Because she tricked you? She talked a good game and totally cucked you? We wind up with this bizarre world, this backwards result. This horribly corrupt result from what originally was supposed to be something of God. And that's the way the devil works. He takes something that God has established and tries to corrupt, tries to twist it around and creates like an opposite. To create a mockery of what God has created. Now, again, getting back to what I kind of touched on before we got off on that, and I probably didn't do that in the right order, but I have confidence that the listeners are able to keep up with it. Let's talk about as we discuss marriage and we discuss the corruption of words. And this is one of the things, as you all well know, regular listeners show know, it's one of my pet peeves. The destruction of language, the destruction of the meaning of words. And as I alluded to earlier, love and hate are two of those great words. Now, when we talk about, we look at the wrecked state of marriage in our corrupt society. know, what would we do to fix it? You know, I arranged marriages. Because, oh, well, you can't do that. You know, people need to get married because they fall in love. What is love? So let's talk about one of the most corrupted words in our modern language, which is love. What is love? Because, it's lost all its meaning in our society. A couple falls in love, and then they get married, and it's like a fairy tale. The bride gets to be a princess on her special day. It's like the husband is a prop that stands up at the wedding ceremony. This is a mockery, by the way. He's the wedding ceremony, and the bride's up there, and this is her special day, and she's a princess, and everybody, the focus has to be on her. A husband's like a prop. They could do like a cutout, cardboard cutout, and have him up there, because it's all about the princess. It's her special day. And it's like, after the honeymoon's over, she's already screwing the gardener. You know, I mean, this is the mockery of what we wind up with. Marriage. Love. What is love? When they fall in love, and they become married. But what we allude to is a love in this modern corrupted world is most of the time just lust. It really is. I mean, you have a chemical, a man and a woman are attracted to each other. You get this chemical reaction, and it usually ultimately leads to sex, which leads to procreation. It's a normal, natural thing. It's not necessarily a quote unquote bad thing. When you let it control you and rule your life, yes, anything taken to the extreme is a bad thing. But that in and of itself is not a bad thing. I mean, if we didn't have those urges, we would never procreate. If you had to sit here and logically think about, okay, now we are going to do this thing and make a child. Nobody would do that. I mean, it was just like, what's in it for me? You know? So we have these urges so that we will continue to create, to carry on our lineage. That's just a natural part of who we are. But taken to the extreme. But now we have twisted the word love to equate to this. And in our society where we have twisted love to mean lust, I mean, it's inevitable. I don't care how quote unquote in love you are, which again, usually equates to that chemical reaction, that lusting that you are. It's inevitable the lust's gonna die. It's inevitable that at some point in time, you know, that's going to recede. And whatever you're left with is like high tide. You know, you get the high tide come in and the shoreline's way up here, you know, and the water meets the shoreline way up here. But inevitably the tide recedes and then you find out what you've got left underneath. And a lot of times when that high tide recedes, what people defined as love recedes and they look around to see what they're left with. They're not left with anything. All they had was that initial lust feeling. When you define love to mean that, you'll always be chasing that. And you'll never have any sort of established long-term thing because you're constantly chasing that new high. You're constantly chasing that new partner that gives you that excitement. And you end up with people that are married 5-6 times, you know, and people that just jump from partner to partner until they're too old to do that and nobody wants them anymore. There's an emptiness. And that's the outcome. And why? Because that's what we have been told is defined as love in our society. Now let's look at John 15:12 for an illustration of love. And this isn't an illustration between man and woman, but it still uses the word love. This is my commandment. This is Jesus speaking. This is my commandment that ye love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. This is one of my pet peeves that I harp about when it comes to scripture, is there's no empty emotionalism in the scripture. There is. That's one of the big problems with the modern cuck church that, you know, throws around the word love that has no meaning. Love is action. All of these things in the scripture are action. Take love in this case. What is love as Jesus is defined here? The greatest love. No greater love. Greater love hath no man than this. They lay down his life for his friends. Action. You want to know what love is? No greater love hath a man than he lay down his life for his friends. That's action. Not empty platitudes. It's not feeling. love is action. I mean, yes, there can be emotion attached to it. I mean, there's an emotional level to it, but that's a very shallow aspect of it. When you get to true actual love, it's action. It's what you're doing, how you treat other people. You can't say in this modern society, you can't, even this scripture verse right here, you can't even talk about loving another man. You know, that, just saying that makes people queasy. You're sitting here squirming right now. If you're a Christian man, you talk about, yeah, I love that guy. You know, I love that guy. He's a good guy. People get squirmy. But why? Because we have attached a sexual nature to the word love. And this, once again, is a perversion from the devil. We have attached a sexual connotation just to where they're almost synonyms, sex and love. So when a man talks about loving another man, homosexual quivers. He's some kind of gay, some kind of faggot. But no greater love of a man than he lay down his life for his friends. If you sit here and talk about, you think about somebody, say he's a war hero, and for his friends to escape, he's got to stay behind and try to hold the line. It's a suicide mission. He's going to die. But he does that out of love for his friends. There's nothing sexual to it. That's doesn't even factor into it. It's actual love. And see, the problem is with love and marriage in this society is that we have defined love down to essentially mean sexual. Once the fun of that wears off, and it eventually is going to wear off, I mean, it's just inevitable. Then there's nothing left. And we sit around, we go, well, there's no love left here. We don't have any love. We can seek out the truth of the matter, which is what we try to do here. In the end, we're kind of left with the same conundrum as Moses was, as in our first scripture reading. You know, we're still dealing with corruptible, failed human beings. That's who we are. I mean, we're in a fallen state in a fallen world. And in the end, the reality is what it is. And this gets to the listener's personal position where one of their children, their grown children now, and they're watching them go through this. I've said before, one of the most difficult things for people to accept is that their parents are normal human beings, just people, you know, because when you're little kids, you look up to your parents and they know everything. But, you know, as they grow, and one of the more difficult things, and some people never do, you know, some people sadly never are able to just accept that their parents aren't perfect. They're just people with failings and weaknesses, and they screw up. But on the flip side of that, one of the more difficult things, I think, for parents is to at some point accept that their children are adults. They're grown and they're going to make their own decisions. Whether you think they're a mistake, you can caution them. But in the end, they're theirs to make. Sometimes I think it's so tempting to want to keep them as little, you know, as 7-year-olds or something. We want to run back and still treat them as little kids and make them listen to us and make them, because we see them on a path and we think it's a mistake and we don't want them. But ultimately, other than cautioning them or telling them, I mean, there's not much else we can do, because at some point in time, we have to accept the fact that they're now adults and they're going to go on whatever path that they're going to choose to go on. It's their life to lead. And finally, on this topic of marriage, we get this, again, like so many things, we get this weird, I don't know, idealistic view of things. When you look at a married couple that's old, you'd see some old couple, maybe a relative, maybe your grandparents, and they've been married for 50 some odd years. Now they're old and you look and they're so sweet, you know, he helps her and he still holds the door for her. And we sit there and say, man, look at that. This is the ideal of marriage right here. Now they're old. They've been together their whole lives. And now look, is he so sweet? Why, she still just relies on him and he still tries to do what he can for her. You think when they were married in like 30, they didn't have these problems? Yeah. How many of those married couples that say they've been married 50 something years and you look at ideally, that's because you don't know that when they were married at 30, he was screwing around on her with some old gal down at the grocery store. Don't talk about that because people don't go around or shouldn't go around airing their dirty laundry. You're sitting here looking at the, because me, all these things are insurmountable. This is so insurmountable. Oh, if we could just be like this old couple. You don't understand. They're that old couple that you see now because when they were 30 and he was banging some hotter girl down at the grocery store, they worked through it. He maybe she doesn't even know. Maybe he just realized that was a mistake and he needs to get back to where he's supposed to be. Or maybe she did find out and they had a fight and they threatened to split up and this and that. But in the end, what they worked through it. Why did they work through it? They took action. And this was love. They took action to overcome that. Love, action. If you look at some old couple that's been married years and years and years, come on. They're still people. Yeah, they're old people now. They weren't always old people. Do you think that when they were young and married, they didn't have some fights? You think they didn't have failings? You think they didn't screw up? They didn't do each other wrong in some way, shape, form, or the other? But yet, for whatever reason, they worked through it. Well, because love. Because that action of pressing forward, of continuing to build, to persevere, that was their form of love. We'll wrap up on that note. Hope that we could go on about these topics and kind of like I just said at the end of the previous segment, you know, I mean, this is a starting point. You know, it's not possible. We just go on and on and on this stuff and really still never cover anything. All we can do is try to give perspective, try to get started on thinking about these things and thinking in a direction. So hopefully we've managed to do that. And hopefully it gives all of you something, you know, at least a starting point as far as these topics. We'll wrap up on that note. Again, we appreciate you joining us. Again, a special thank you to all of you who do support the show financially. It is very much appreciated. It really does make a difference. I just scratch my way through week by week and y'all's support is very much part of that. And it's very much appreciated. We're going to get on out of here. We'll be back. Don't worry. We'll be back for, you know, for what is it? It'll be installment number 29 next week of the Church of the Lampshades show. So it'll be here before you know it, and there's no telling what we'll be discussing. We'll see you then. Until then, keep pressing forward and keep the faith.
To the anti-white system on RadioArea.com.